We're talking now with Arthur Beislein. He's a candidate for Sandpoint City Council. Arthur, thanks for taking time to talk with us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start with an introduction. Introduce yourself to the voters, tell a bit about your background, how long you've been in Sandpoint, and any family or community ties you want to mention.
All right, well, I was born here at Bonner General in 1969. My dad was Steve Beislein, and my mother was Sharon Beislein. She was formerly Sharon Mooney. Her family was from here. She was born here in 1939. My dad came up in 1949 after law school, and we were here. I was here until right after first grade at Washington. My dad got appointed to the court in Boise, and so we moved to Boise, and I had to go to high school there, which I really did not like. I spent most of my time trying to figure out how to be here. I even contemplated, you know, coming up here and going to high school just so I could be here. Then went to University of Idaho in 87 and graduated summa cum laude business finance in 91. I did it for 4.5 years, so I had one semester to just hang out in Moscow and work and get ready to go to law school. And then I went to law school at Idaho, graduated in 95, and then after that, the summer before that, I interned with Gary Finney and Bill Nixon in Coeur d'Alene. And then Nixon offered me a job in Coeur d'Alene, so my wife and I moved there in 95. We were there from 95 until 2012. We still have property here, my family did, and so we spent a lot of time up here. And finally, I convinced her that, you know, we've been here a long time. We have two friends in Coeur d'Alene. All our friends are in Sandpoint, so she finally agreed that we could, you know, come up here. And so I've been here since 2012. I practice, my main office is in Coeur d'Alene. I have an office here above the Edward Jones over by 7B Fitness there, the old pasta house. And I think my qualifications would be, you know, having litigated for so many years, I've in most cases settled. And so I think I'm pretty good at helping people find compromise, finding a middle ground, you know, helping my clients. I'm not the one who settles the case. They are, but you have to help them understand, you know, where there is common ground with the other side, which I think is something that we're really sorely lacking in our politic in general in our country, is, you know, being willing to sit down and talk with people and see why they hold the opinions they do.
Mm-hmm. Are there other elected positions you've held in the past, or any nonprofit organizations you volunteered for you want to mention?
I volunteered for Friends of Head Start in Coeur d'Alene. They're one of those groups that, because Head Start, if they raise too much money, then the feds don't give them as much money, and so we would raise money separately. But, you know, my main experience is not been working for nonprofits, other than, you know, as an attorney, helping them set things up. I worked as the Dover City Attorney for, I think, 15 years, I'm not even sure. Which was right during the time when Dover Bay came through the whole city council, and I got to watch that entire process from the day that Ralph Schlediger walked in with a poster board saying, "This is what I'm thinking about," to the day that it was done. And, you know, when you work for cities, you learn, you know, how it works and how they do things. And, you know, and I think what I really learned is that they will try to extract as much as they can out of businesses to let them do business, and that always bothered me. You're going to push them to the point where it's worth paying their attorney to tell you that you can't do that, and that's a pretty big point, given how much litigation costs, especially with a public entity. And so I don't know if that's going on here. I've heard some stories of impact fees that probably were a little high, and weren't really giving consideration to what the point of the project was. And I think I have an eye towards helping the city behave properly as regards its citizens. You know, one thing that I've complained about and actually confronted the city with is this idea that if I do a remodel on my house, I have to fix the public sidewalk. I mean, there's a statute that says they can do that, but it's plainly illegal. I mean, a sidewalk is a public amenity. Taxes pay for that, not the private landowner. I think that's, you know, my finance background. Obviously, I'm not a finance expert because I don't practice in finance, but I think it helps me be pretty quick on the understanding numbers, which when you're dealing with the city, I think that's probably the most important thing, is understanding you have a limited budget and how do we make it work for the city.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, here's a question I'm asking all the candidates. You're running for city council. How many Sandpoint City Council meetings have you attended the past couple years?
Past couple years? Probably none. So I think the last one that I attended was actually the one where they voted down the curve. I wasn't really as concerned with the curve. I was more concerned with why it took 3 years to switch the traffic flow when the bypass was done, when they could have just simply changed some striping and signs and had a much safer thing and given us back our downtown. And which brings me to another point is, you know, I would be very vigilant at protecting the city from outside political bodies, such as the Department of Transportation, the Department of Lands. I mean, when you see this traffic flow, it's ridiculous. It's dangerous. It's not good. And, you know, like, for example, that light on the corner of the 5th and Cedar, you know, that's right turn or straight. Well, it was always just right turn. And now it creates this dangerous backup all the way up Cedar Street when somebody wants to go straight. And, you know, the city says that's DOT's light and there's nothing they can do about it. And I'm like, yes, there is. And I think that's what I bring is, you know, maybe a bit more of a let's find a way to compromise. But at some point, you know, that is ridiculous what they're doing. It's really dangerous. I mean, I work on 4th Street, and so there's been many times where there's that gap, you know, where the cars are almost back on the other side of 3rd Street, and you got bikers going across there, and it's that kind of inaction that, you know, I think I would bring to the table to deal with, you know, to say, we have to fix this, and it's not being fixed. And if you ask anybody in town, they think it all needs to be fixed, but nobody's doing anything about it. And I'm not judging the city council, I mean, because I've never held their job, and so I don't know what's going on. I'm just saying that would be, my approach would be to protect this town.
Mm. Well, let's roll right into the what you consider to be the biggest issues for Sandpoint right now and should be what candidates are talking about. And where do you stand on these issues?
Well, I was on the show yesterday with Jason Welker, and he has, you know, a very valid point that, you know, given what's going on around here, our comp plan needs to be updated. And to me, that's an important issue, but it's also kind of one that is already a given. I mean, that has to be done. It's statutorily required. We can't not do it. The issue that I'd be interested in right off the bat is workforce housing. And I understand that there's some commissions working on that or some groups that are getting together trying to figure out what to do. But my perception is we have more people than we ever have. We have more affluent people than we ever have, and we can't keep a restaurant open. And I hear from the restaurant people that they can't staff it. And I, you know, went to U.S. Bank the other day, and the lady said, well, I'm glad you're here today because we're not open the next 2 days because they can't staff the bank. I mean, my wife just took a job with the county because given what they would pay, it would be extremely difficult to get a person with a law degree to come here and take that job. So something needs to happen, and I would view it would be a partnership between everybody involved, the county, all the cities in the county. And how you do that, you know, that would be something we'd have to figure out. I would say the public finances it, and then the businesses slowly pay back the public and own the building, just so we can get people here. You know, first step one is to figure out how many do we think we need. And I'm talking true workforce housing, not affordable housing. I'm talking you don't live there unless you work as an employee in this town. Because you can have all these people, but they, you know, it's a stretch for these people that came from these big cities with all these restaurants already to come to a town with very limited services, and then when they get here, the services are even more limited, not just restaurants, plumbers, anybody. It's, I mean, I'm blessed because I have clients that have these skills who will do me a favor, but everybody else is just like, get in line and we'll talk to you in 6 months. So mm-hmm. Something's got to happen on that regard.
Mm-hmm. Okay, other issues that are motivating your campaign?
Primarily what motivates my campaign is just wanting to, one, contribute, and to know what's going on, why certain things aren't done. I think that, you know, once you get into the position, you know, what's important is what the people think is important. And, you know, I would be careful to not get hung up on what I think ought to have happen. I plan on being very available. I have an office in town. I have a staff. I mean, I plan on basically saying, if you want to come see me, between 4 and 5, set an appointment and I'll be there. And on that, my email for this affair is viceline4council@gmail.com. So I encourage people, if they want to know anything more about what I think, to send me an email. But I'm really an issue-specific person. I don't have an ideology. I mean, if you ask me about the military, you might think I'm a hardcore right-wing hawk. If you ask me about education, you might think I'm a bleeding heart liberal. It's issue by issue. I just don't have any preconceived idea of the way anything ought to be. It's just, what are we faced with and how do we handle it?
Okay. Well, here's a question I am asking all the candidates. There will be a ballot issue for city residents to vote on, asking if they'll approve a 1% local option sales tax on purchases made in the city with the money earmarked for parks and sidewalks. Where do you stand on that proposed 1% local option tax?
Obviously on the sidewalks, I think that's the way they should do it, not make the homeowners, but as far as the parks go, they are important. And this is obviously a place where you come to recreate, and having better boat launches, better parking, a better beach. I'm not totally familiar with what the deal was that was made between the Edgewater and the city as regards that property. Initially, I thought maybe it wasn't such a good deal, but then I thought, well, that's a really big piece of property they're giving up for waterfront that these people really don't use anyway. Just Edgewater uses it. So I think, it's a good idea. I just wish there'd be a way you could wrap perhaps workforce housing into it. I think once you put it on the ballot, it kind of has to be used for what it says. But yeah, it taxes the people who are here spending money. I don't like the fact that it taxes the people who live here who are maybe not that wealthy, who are paying the same amount of tax as people who are. I've never liked that about sales tax. But it's a way to get it done, and it certainly isn't going to hurt us. That's obviously already a pretty epic place to be.
Okay. We have high infection rates for COVID-19 virus continuing, and the Delta variant has actually made the situation worse and caused a surge in cases and hospitalizations and deaths even. How do you feel the city's done with handling the whole COVID-19 crisis?
Well, I'm not exactly sure what they did do. I kind of subscribe to the idea that if it should be up to local business owners, but by the same token, and up to private citizens, if you don't wear a mask, you can't come into my house. If you don't wear a mask, you can't come into my business. What bothers me about all that is that these people, in the exercise of whatever liberty interests they think they're protecting by refusing to wear a mask into Walmart, well, they're tromping all over Walmart's private property rights. And so I would, just wish that these businesses would enforce their rights. Say, if I say wear a mask, you wear a mask or you don't come in. And I actually confronted a guy at Walmart. He was yelling at the poor lady, saying, wear a mask. And I'm like, when was the last time you freaked out about no shoes, no shirt, no service? Mm-hmm. And threatened to kill the mayor because of it. It's just, it's like something for everybody to latch on to. So I know it's a longer, more involved answer, but I just think that government should probably stay out of it. As far as healthcare workers go, I don't know. We don't know what COVID is. We don't know if these vaccines are going to have any long-term effects, but we are pretty sure that COVID's going to have some very long-term effects. Even if it doesn't kill you, I think we're going to have a whole population of people with disabilities because of this. I've chosen to err on the side of caution. I already had it. I had it back in June of last year. And I was a poster boy for why you wear a mask, because I would have never known had I not been contact traced and went and gotten tested. It's hard for me to have the government tell people what to do. I know they do it already with all kinds of vaccines. I don't even know about that. It's not really something I've considered too terribly hard, because I've already been vaccinated for everything that I'm aware of.
Okay, generally speaking, do you feel the city council and the mayor have been taking the city in the right direction at present? Or if you're elected, would you like to do some things differently?
Well, like I said, the things that stand out to me, I would like to do differently. One, you know, fix our sidewalks. Two, fix our roads. I mean, you drive down 4th Street in South Sandpoint and you dump your coffee all over you. I mean, it's ridiculous. And that's not the only place. All over the place, they're really embarrassing. And I've heard numerous excuses like, oh, well, it's cold weather. Well, I've been to Banff. And it's colder there, and their roads don't look like this. So maybe we should get together with them and see what the problem is. And I know it all takes money. But I think we need to find a way to come up with the money to fix the roads. We need to trade into traffic flow. There's a few things I think the city should also do, which is like this statute that says the Idaho legislature is the only one who can pass any kind of a gun law. I don't understand why the people who are here, who are so anti, you know, distant government telling us what to do, why they think it's okay for people in Boise to tell us how to keep our own city safe. And I'm not saying I want gun laws. I'm just saying that statute should be offensive, but it's not. You've got the county trying to enforce it, which is basically the county, well, they were trying to. County basically saying that we think Boise should be able to tell us what to do. So I think the city is going in a fine direction. I think parks are great. I just would like to see some improvements to obviously our infrastructure. And again, I know this all takes money.
Mm-hmm. One more question. Things in the county and even locally are badly politically polarized. You kind of touched on it right there with that issue. How would you seek to represent the whole of our population, even those who may not have voted for you or hold opposing opinions?
Just listen to them, right? Just see what, and a lot of times you'll find that if you talk to people who appear that maybe they have a completely different political view than you, that if you keep talking to them, you'll find out that you have a lot more common ground than you believe. I have a lot of hardcore right-wing friends who think that, you know, Obamacare is terrible and blah, blah, blah. But if you logic it through with them about insurance and the economics of insurance, you know, a lot of times they will agree that, yeah, the government probably should run insurance because they're the ultimate insurer anyway. As soon as hurricane hits and the insurance company is going to go bankrupt, they step in and bail them out. So what's the middleman? I don't see any value added. But that's just a logical approach, and it ends up at a place where the government's running insurance and the government can't do anything. Well, the government can do some things, and if an idiot can run an insurance company, it's actuarial science. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, the divide to me is a product of the political parties, period. If you look back at what our founding fathers thought about political parties, they said it would lead to factions, extremism, and here we are.
Well, Arthur Beislein, you gave your contact information as beislein4council@gmail.com, and folks can get a hold of you there if they have more questions. I want to say thanks for talking with us today.
Thanks for having me.